Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Broadcaster and author Ian Dale now joins us in studio to discuss the latest book he's edited, The Taoiseach, A Century of Political Leadership. You are very welcome to the show, Ian.
Great to be here.
So what inspired you to look across the water to Ireland and to look at our Taoiseach over the year, our Taoiseach over 100 years and say, yes, there's a good story in those people?
Well, I'd done books on British prime ministers, American presidents, kings and queens, dictators. And I thought I'd probably look at French presidents or German chancellors. And then I remembered seeing a drama on RTE called Rebellion, all about the Easter Rising. This is like back in 2016, it was on Netflix. And I remember thinking then, why don't I know more about Irish politics, given that we share a language, we share a sort of slightly common history, he says tactfully. And I'm thinking, why don't we learn about Ireland in schools? And we just don't in the UK. So I started sort of educating myself on Irish politics. I sort of followed all the general elections. I kind of knew who the more modern Taoiseach were. But not the, I'd never heard of John Costello, for example, or W.T. Cosgrave, obviously heard of De Valera. So I then thought, okay, well, let's do a book. So I wanted to do it in the same format where each Taoiseach would be covered by a separate person. So I wouldn't be writing it, I'd be editing it and putting the jigsaw together. But we couldn't find a publisher. We approached publishers in Ireland. No one was interested. And given that nobody's ever done this before, I was really quite shocked by this. So I was talking to a British publisher about another book I was doing, a biography of Margaret Thatcher. And I said, I don't suppose you'd be interested in this. And to my utter astonishment, they said, yeah, let's give it a go. And so that's how it's all come about.
And at this stage, you had the podcast.
Well, I did the podcast when I couldn't do the book. So normally you'd do the podcast after the book. And that turned out to be really popular. I thought I might get some pushback, sort of a Brit doing a podcast on sort of Irish politics. I thought that might not be too popular. But it was. And the podcast and the book, they're kind of aimed at a general reader, somebody who knows a little bit about Irish politics, but it's not an expert. It's written in a very accessible way. There are no footnotes. And I want it to appeal to, I suppose, maybe high school students, university students, maybe immigrants who've come to the country and maybe they're doing a citizenship test and want to just have a basic understanding of Irish history over the last 100 years.
Maybe your objectivity was a positive thing because Ireland, I think, unlike so many countries across the EU, we're pretty obsessed with politics. All politics is local. We really know our politicians. We follow political stories very closely. We are very involved in elections in this country. And everybody has an opinion, which I don't think is the same in other countries.
There's nothing like an Irish election, I've discovered. they fascinate me. And I'm now hooked on Irish politics. So I listen to various political podcasts in Ireland, particularly the Irish Times one, Inside Politics. I mean, I think that's great. And it is a very different political scene to elsewhere. I mean, Britain and Ireland share quite a lot of similar systems, but there are great differences. And I think the political media here is sort of very different in a way to that in Westminster.
You mentioned there how little is known in England about Irish politics, and it used to really jar with me when I lived in London for years and I'd be trying to speak to people about what was happening in Northern Ireland and their faces would just completely blank over and they were, by and large, I have to be truthful, really disinterested.
You're absolutely right. And I don't think that's just in London. I think it's throughout the whole country. And it still is the same. I mean, Northern Ireland is seen as a bit of an inconvenience. I think that there is maybe a bit more interest now that the troubles seem to be more or less over. But And sort of reunification, I think, is a subject which interests people. And I think there's this general thought that nobody in the UK wants to see reunification. That is simply not true. But then again, it's not true that everyone in the Republic wants to see unification either. And not all nationalists in the North want to see unification. So I think this is going to be one of the subjects that really dominates both our politics over the next 10 years.
Now, let me look to the book, because there's a really, really great quote on the back of it from Rory Carroll, who's the Irish correspondent for The Guardian. He says, it's a glittering kaleidoscope. A glittering kaleidoscopic view of the bumblers, chancers, do-gooders and political wizards who have led and shaped Ireland. And when I read that quote over the weekend when I was reading the book, I thought, now who comes under those different titles?
Go on, Ian. Rory.
Who were the chancers? Who were the do-gooders? Who were the bumblers? And who were the political wizards?
Well, I think there are various political wizards, actually. I mean, you could describe a lot of them in those terms. I mean, obviously, look, everybody in the UK has heard of Eamon de Valera. They might not know much about him. Probably what they know is that he didn't support Britain in the Second World War. But obviously, he's a much more complex character than that. I think he was a bit of a political wizard in many ways, but a very conservative wizard with a small c, was not interested in liberalisation, reform in any shape or form. And, of course, the church had this sort of vice-like grip on the political system, I think, particularly the education system at the time. And then, with a little bit of an interim, then comes along Sean Lamass, who I had vaguely heard of, if I'm honest, but didn't know much about. And the chapter on him, written by Bryce Evans, is fascinating. And I think you could... I mean, everyone sees de Valera as sort of the godfather of the Irish state. But I actually think Sean Lamass has a claim to that title as well, because I think he was essentially quite a conservative figure, particularly in his early years. But when he became Taoiseach in 1959, I mean, he was only Taoiseach for 7 years, so it wasn't a particularly long stretch. But I think he really did see the future and started the liberalisation process, which, and I'm not going to say it's been completed, but it's sort of... It heralded a lot of the societal changes that we've seen in Ireland over the past 20 years. And the economy as well was... I think he didn't become a sort of free market liberal overnight, but he recognised that tariffs were a thing of the past.
We'd been extremely protectionist prior to that.
Exactly.
And he began to look to Europe and he began to look at America.
Yeah, I mean, he applied to join the EC, as did Britain in 1963, but he didn't get along with de Gaulle. Nobody got along with de Gaulle, and so we were both vetoed. Then 10 years later, obviously Britain and Ireland joined the EC. So I think he was a bit of a visionary in that regard. And I think sort of in all sort of different parts of Irish society, you can look back and see his fingerprints on them. And that, in a sense, heralds a truly great politician. Now, have there been many of those since? I mean, I grew up, I was a teenager in the late 70s and sort of became an adult in the early 80s. And so Charles Hockey was the first Taoiseach that I really took much interest in. I'd heard of Jack Lynch, I'd heard of Liam Cosgrave, but Hockey was the one. And I mean, again, Gary Murphy, who wrote that doorstop of a biography of Hockey, how he's distilled that down into 6,000 words, I don't know, but he's done a brilliant job. And a truly fascinating character. I mean, how did a man who was accused of being involved in the gun-running plot in, what was it, 1970, 71?
In the arms trial.
And then 10 years later, he's Taoiseach. I mean, an amazing achievement. And I suppose also because of his relationship with Margaret Thatcher over his different periods in office, that led me to become quite interested in him. I mean, she loathed him. She started off by rather liking him. She thought he was a bit of an old rogue, and she liked a bit of a rogue. But after the Falklands War, it was it, because he tried to get the EC to lift sanctions on Argentina, and she never forgave him for that.
There's a great line in the chapter about Sean Lamass, which was one of the standout chapters for me in the book, and it said, he professed a rather high-handed disdain for Abulia, or indolence in the Irish national character. He really, I think, turned to the people of Ireland and said, hold on a second here. We can be self-sufficient here. Yeah. We can be a country to be reckoned with, but you need to get up and get working and listen to me. And he was very, he lacked any sentimentality when it came to getting that message into getting that sort of policy across.
And that's not an easy message for a politician to get across to a country that maybe doesn't want to hear that kind of message. Sometimes electorates don't want to hear hard truths. And I think he was good at doing that. But I often wonder, and Bryce tells this story at the beginning of the chapter about when he was a child, he shot his baby brother in the head accidentally. How do you get over that? I mean, what was his whole career after his involvement in the Civil War? Was his whole career devoted to public service to try and atone for the fact that he had actually killed his brother?
I mean, he was 16 years of age, yeah. And his brother was 19 months old, and he was playing with a loaded revolver in the sitting room, and he shot him by accident.
You don't forget something like that, do you? I mean, it must, for many people, it would prey on your mind as soon as you wake up every morning.
And the first opening chapter in the book I also really enjoyed, which is written by Owen O'Malley, I think, and he talks about Taoiseach in this country being either chairman.
Yeah.
Or a chair, I should say a chairperson, but it's always been a chairman, a chairman or a chief.
Yeah.
And that instinctively some of our Taoiseach have been chiefs, but actually over the last 100 years, they've had to become more and more like chairman.
I would also distinguish it between leaders and followers. There are leaders who are leaders of public opinion, as Sean Lamass was, and there are leaders who are followers of public opinion, as our current Prime Minister Keir Starmer is. And it's very rarely the followers that succeed. And if you go right through to the present day, I mean, I think most of them, to be fair, I mean, Bertie Ahern, I think, is somebody who, I mean, in Britain, he is seen as a bit of a star. Everyone likes Bertie Ahern and thought he was a really good Taoiseach. Whereas here, because of the overhang of the financial crisis, because of his own financial issues, I think he's got a bit of a different reputation. It's a bit like Margaret Thatcher in Britain. She's reviled still by many people, yet in the world, she's seen as this titanic political figure.
Where do you place the modern-day Taoiseach? And I'm thinking of Simon Harris, and I'm thinking of Micheál Martin, and I'm thinking of Leo Varadkar. How do you place them? Where will they come, do you think, in the ranking if this book has been written in another 50 years? Will history be kind to them?
Well, let's start with the current Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. He's certainly lasted the course, and it's only now are there sort of murmurings about discontent with Fianna Fáil, about what happened in the presidential election, and you wonder whether he's kind of going to be on his way out. Will he fight the next election? I mean, it's still 4 years away. Who knows? My suspicion is not. I think he's been a good Taoiseach. I think he's been respected, not just in this country, but abroad. Everything I hear about him in Britain suggests that our politicians rather like him and get on well with him. I'm not sure if that's an important metric or not. Leo Varadkar, I mean, have you read his book? Mm. I mean, I think a lot of people have found that very disappointing, I think, in that it's not quite gone into the sort of seaweeds of politics that one needs to.
I don't know if you'd call it warts and all. But I think the chapter in this book is very fair to him, actually, because it really says, look, he walked in to Brexit and he walked out with COVID behind him, and they are two cataclysmic events to have happened to the country under his leadership. Now, I do not think he would like that comparison, Dale, you could say what you like.
But of course, I mean, his time was dominated by Brexit. And it was interesting. I did a podcast on Friday, the first thing I did when I arrived. And the guy who was interviewing me was obsessed still by Brexit and just wanted to relitigate all of the arguments. And I get the feeling that Brexit is still a bigger thing here in public discourse than it is in the UK, whereas we think, it's 5 years ago, it's all behind us now, and we're just getting on with it. Whereas I'm not sure that, I mean, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm not sure that's the case here.
I can't remember the last time I heard a podcast or a radio interview about Brexit in national media in Ireland.
I've got a couple more to do. So
okay.
Because I just kept thinking, can't you move on? This is all in the past now. And okay, I'm sure there are still difficulties in some of the sort of trading relationships, but it's not the big issue of the day.
Ian Dale, the book is called The Taoiseach, available in all good bookshops
and
now.
A
century
too.
Of political leadership and a podcast too. Lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.